Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, talknation.org for news and discussion on international affairs. I'm Dori Smith with a special broadcast. The group Doctors for Iraq are warning of an urgent humanitarian crisis as U.S. and Iraqi military attacks continue in western Iraq. Civilians are said to be fleeing Haditha, Rawa, Parwana, and Heat and are coming under various kinds of attacks there. There are reports of attacks at hospitals and of devastating shortages of all healthcare-related supplies, including medicine, bandages, antibiotics, and things like oxygen. Doctors for Iraq is hoping U.S. and international listeners will contact them at press.officer@doctorsforiraq.org. A spokesperson for the group, Aisha, joined us from Jordan.
Good evening, Dori. Well, there's been a humanitarian crisis unfolding in Iraq for a number of years since the sanctions in the country, which destabilized the health system and caused a lot of misery for the average person living in the country. However, following on from the last 3 years and the invasion and occupation of Iraq, that situation has become more critical. The organization that I work with, Doctors for Iraq, is a small NGO made of voluntary doctors that work in the conflict zones of Iraq, and these voluntary doctors are actually at the moment working in the west of Iraq, where a number of military operations have been launched by the US military and also the Iraqi military in the area over the past few weeks and months. And as a result, the situation on the ground is very critical. There is a shortage of medicine in the hospitals. The hospitals themselves have actually been attacked. And I'm focusing now on the areas in the west of Iraq, so I'm talking about Haditha, Rawa, Parwana. Those are the main areas that we're concerned about at the moment. The main medical referral hospital in Haditha, which caters for about 300,000 people, has been attacked twice by U.S. military and Iraqi forces. The soldiers actually entered the hospital, and the doctors there have given us various reports of the level of aggression and violence that was directed towards patients and also towards medical staff once the military were inside the hospital. And a great deal of damage has been caused to that particular hospital. For example, the main medical store where there's enough medical equipment, medication, surgical kits, etc., to cater for the 300,000 people in the area has been totally destroyed. And this is primarily because of the fact that when the military entered the hospital, they were firing live rounds of ammunition, according to the people inside the hospital, and they set fire to the medical store because of that. We've had some very serious allegations reported to our doctors on the ground, including an allegation that a patient was shot dead by U.S. forces in his bed. What I'd like to say is that there's no real way of verifying any of these reports because there's no international presence on the ground in Iraq or in the west of Iraq, which are the main conflict areas. And so it's very difficult to actually get any proof of what people are alleging. But it's a very, very serious situation.
When you talk about U.S. troops entering the hospital, who else is involved in these attacks? Just define who is going into the hospital for military purposes and what your thoughts are on why they're there doing that.
Okay, well, my first thought is that under the Geneva Convention, medical staff should be protected from military aggression, and more importantly, patients should also be protected from military aggression. Regarding this particular hospital in Haditha, we do know that over a month ago, a number of U.S. soldiers lost their lives in a roadside bomb, and that subsequently led to an escalation in aggression shown to the area where this roadside bomb went off. And we also know that according to the U.S. military, they entered this hospital because they believed that some insurgents were inside the hospital at the time. However, as humanitarians, what we argue is that a hospital should be a safe place. It should be a place where people can access healthcare, and it shouldn't be a place where Marines, soldiers can just walk in and use live rounds of ammunition as they've been alleged to have used, and to cause widespread destruction and damage to that particular hospital. And furthermore, the staff in the hospital have actually reported to us that many of them were detained for many, many hours and were prevented from carrying out their duties as doctors. Some of the medics inside the area have actually supplied us with documentary footage of the destruction to the hospital. So we know for sure that the hospital has been damaged quite considerably, and it's going to cost a lot of money to rehabilitate that particular hospital. But that's just one hospital in one part of Iraq. We know that with the siege of the two sieges of Fallujah, for example, which did receive some media attention, in the first one in April, many doctors have said that they faced a lot of intimidation when they were out trying to save people's lives and do what they should be doing as doctors. And the second siege, we know that in November last year, November, December last year, we know that the US military, along with the Iraqi military, did actually go to the hospital and siege the hospital. These are actually known facts that the US military has admitted to. So we are deeply concerned as humanitarians and as doctors that this is continuing, because, as I said, under the Geneva Convention, hospitals and doctors should not be targeted. Doctors should be allowed to carry out their work as doctors, and more importantly, patients should not be deprived medical attention.
Aisha, is Doctors for Iraq affiliated with any other groups or governments?
It's a voluntary organization which is not funded by the Iraqi government or any other government for that matter. The doctors are dedicated and committed to helping the civilians in their country, and the actual ethos of Doctors for Iraq is based on the ethos of Medicine Sans Frontières and Doctors Without Borders, which is very simple, that the medics will go into any area that they can reach which is in need, and in particular they're going into the areas in the west of Iraq, which is primarily the main areas that are, you know, being heavily bombed and also being targeted by the US forces and the Iraqi forces. So that really is what Doctors for Iraq is about. And in terms of how we are able to assist people, it's mostly through hand-to-mouth donations. So we send out press releases and we request for urgent assistance. And we've built some very good contacts in the last 3 years through some of our key doctors who've traveled all around the world talking about the medical humanitarian situation on the ground. And they've been able to times donate equipment to us, which we've then been able to organize the logistics of getting the equipment in from around the Middle East into Iraq. And what we do is we use local drivers, for example, who know the routes and they know the roads and they know how to get in and out of a city that's under siege. So that's really how we work. We don't have any link to the Iraqi government or any other international government. We, at the moment, we're working independently, and that's something that we pride ourselves on, and that's why we're actually trusted, because there are very few Iraqi people that will accept any U.S. aid. That's actually a fact, because they perceive the U.S. Government for being responsible for what's happening in their country. So it's very difficult for them to then be able to accept aid coming in directly from an organization that's linked to the U.S. And that's why we have integrity on the ground, because we're working independently. And the other thing that I think maybe your listeners might not be aware of is the level of corruption inside Iraq. It's huge levels of corruption, particularly when it comes to healthcare issues. So, for example, at the moment, you've got in many places you've got doctors being issued with laptops left, right, and centre, mobile phones, and the hospital, outside of a hospital, there's like marble flooring outside, but when you actually walk into the hospital, there isn't a decent operating theatre, there aren't surgical kits, there aren't the most basic of medicines. So this is a real problem that the doctors are actually facing on the ground, is the corruption levels, and I think it's something that we need to not shy away from and need to talk about openly, which is another reason why Doctors for Iraq is very proud of the way it works. As I said, we're an independent body. We rely on donations. We're very transparent. If we receive a donation from any outside organisation. We provide them with all the right receipts so they can see exactly where the money's gone, and the young doctors on the ground will also take photographs and footage to then pass on to the organisations that have assisted us. There's many solidarity groups in Europe that have wanted to help the people in the west of Iraq, and they've given money, for example, to allow aid convoys into the city of Fallujah when it was under siege in December last year. And so we've been able to use that money to take in food, for example, and take in clothing for children. And we've been able to be very transparent in our work and show exactly where that money's gone. And the thing that we're very proud of, actually, in relation to that particular work that we did, was that when the particular doctors took this convoy in, we made a banner with the Doctors for Iraq logo, and we also made it clear that this was a gift from the British people, because we know that there's a lot of anger inside Iraq, justifiably, towards the British and towards the American people, because of the fact that both governments are responsible for the situation inside Iraq in terms of the occupation. And we believe that that was a very good opportunity for us to remind Iraqis, particularly in the West, that actually we need to make a distinction between the governments and the people, and that this particular aid convoy had been funded by the people of Britain, who many of whom are in solidarity with the people inside Iraq, just as many people in the U.S. are.
We're talking with Aisha. She's a spokesperson for Doctors for Iraq. You can reach their organization by writing to the following address: salam.obadai@doctorsforiraq.org. That's capital S-A-L-A-M dot O-B-A-I-D-I at doctorsforiraq.org. Their press office is pressofficer@doctorsforiraq.org. That is capital P-R-E-S-S dot officer@doctorsforiraq.org.
Fine. And what I'd like to say as well is, if anybody does want to contact us, if you could be patient with us, because I'm sure you can appreciate the logistics of trying to organize for example, surgical kits to be shipped into the area and all that kind of thing. It does take time, and we appreciate that many people, I'm sure some of them are your listeners, have written to us and they haven't received a response as yet. And I'd just like to assure everybody that we do read every single email, and we greatly appreciate the time that people taken out to find out more about what's happening to the Iraqi people, particularly those living in the west of the country, and we will respond as soon as we can.
I also noticed that Doctors for Iraq are calling for an independent investigation into the breaches of the Geneva Convention that they're documenting, the alleged killing of civilians and the obstruction of medical personnel from carrying out their work. That would mean possibly the targeting of ambulances, as I've heard reported in the past.
Absolutely, and there's no possible targeting. There has been targeting. I've spoken to doctors who've talked to me in great detail about how, when they were traveling in an ambulance, the ambulance was fired upon by the US military and the Iraqi military in the area. Rockets were fired at ambulances. Many paramedics have been injured, and others have lost their lives, and lots of key medical staff have suffered the same fate. And unfortunately, you can draw very real parallels between the targeting of doctors and the blockade, blocking civilians from accessing healthcare. You can draw direct parallels to the situation in a country not very far away from Iraq, which is Palestine. The exact same thing has been happening there for a long time, and that's been well documented. The difference is that despite the human rights violations going on inside the occupied Palestine, international organizations can still have a presence, and they have a system, a mechanism in place, for example, where they can get accurate reporting. So I myself worked with the Palestinian Red Crescent Society, and they have a system in place where they report regularly to the Red Cross and the other international bodies if a paramedic is detained at a checkpoint and is questioned, or his ambulance is not allowed to go through a checkpoint, or if a doctor is shown aggression by an Israeli soldier. All those incidences are actually catalogued and they're sent to Geneva. There's no such system in place in Iraq. There's absolutely nothing like that going on, which is something that we would want to see in place. But as I said, the reason why it's not in place is because of the fact the situation on the ground is horrific. And it's very, very unsafe. If any doctor is willing to report a human rights violation, first of all, who will they report it to? There's no body inside the country. And secondly, they're actually putting their lives at risk by actually speaking up and speaking out, which is something that is very real.
Talk about the overall picture in the region of Western Iraq right now. That's near the Jordanian border, the Syrian border. What kinds of operations are going on there that you know about?
Well, I mean, we're humanitarians, so we focus really, our sort of main area of work is focusing the spotlight on the humanitarian crisis in the area. So we do know that up until a week ago, the military operations were continuing in the area, and we know that the main bridges linking these areas in the west of Iraq to the rest of the country have been bombed, which is creating even more hardship for people. So in terms of trying to get medical supplies in or trying to get food convoys into the area is proving to be very, very difficult. But what I can paint for you is a picture of the critical situation on the ground, which is that people are fleeing. I mean, many people have left the area for obvious reasons because military attacks are continuing. And there's, I mean, simple things. I mean, one statistic which I'm sure people find shocking, for example, is that malnutrition rates inside Iraq during the sanctions was at 4.4%. Since the invasion and the occupation, it now stands at 7.5%, which is one of the highest in the world, and that statistic actually comes from a Norwegian research centre. And, you know, 7.5% is almost, you would find lower rates in some parts of Africa. So that is the impact that this occupation and is having on everyday people, and the average Iraqi family, for example. And that's what we as Doctors for Iraq are focusing on. And we're deeply concerned at what's going on. And what we're urging is for international monitors to go into the area. We understand it's very dangerous, but we believe that it's the only way of actually collating data, getting eyewitness testimony, and actually piecing together what's been going on over the past few months. And so we have a full picture of what's been going on, and then we can take it from there.
We never hear about the civilian populations in these regions or what happens to them after these bombs fall.
If the military is launching a huge sustained attack on a civilian area, then it's obvious that civilians are going to die, they're going to be left with horrific injuries, and that much, I think, no, I don't think anybody can dispute that fact. And as you say, information is not coming out, and one has to ask why. I mean, the reasons why are almost obvious as well, but I'll state them for you. I mean, first and foremost, there are very few journalists on the ground in that area because it's very, very dangerous. And then, unfortunately, the media, and many people believe, has almost become a machine of the military, in the sense that we've had this new phenomena of journalists being embedded with troops, with the military, and so they can only go into areas with soldiers, and in many ways their reporting is also controlled. So that's another reason, but the main reason is because it's so dangerous for anybody to go into those areas. And so what's happening is the young doctors that are part of the medical, part of the Doctors for Iraq Society, are actually, not only are they doing their job as doctors, they're also trying to document the human rights violations on the ground. And it's a very dangerous thing for them to do because they're being targeted as a result. If you know, carrying a camera around, for example, in that part of Iraq is a very difficult thing to do. And I think what this the invasion and occupation of Iraq has shown is, you know, the limited information that we are receiving in terms of the getting a true and accurate picture of what's happening is deliberate, and I don't think anybody should be in denial of that. But the tragedy is that there's many, many people, many organisations, international human rights organisations, that are desperate to work in Iraq and to assist the people, but they can't because of the fact that it's so dangerous. And they, you know, they very much are feeling anxious about hearing these reports, but knowing that there's very little at the moment that they can really do.
Talk about the risks for the civilian population if world attention does not start to focus on the civilian populations again as violence increases in Iraq.
Well, to be honest with you, the risks that the civilian population faces will continue until the occupation ends. It's as simple as that. As soon as the occupation forces leave Iraq, I believe, as most Iraqis I've spoken to, most of the professionals I've spoken to, we know that there's other problems. We know that there's other things that are going on there. But the main issue in Iraq is the occupation, and that has to come to an end. And the other thing I wanted to say is that the onus is on the occupiers to ensure that under international law that they are providing the civilian population of the country that they're occupying with the adequate access to health care, for example, to medicine, to make sure that they have electricity, to make sure they have clean drinking water. This is simply not happening. So in many ways, if the occupation is to continue, if the very government, the very military that's occupying the country, if they actually abided by their duties under international law to ensure that civilians had everything that they need in terms of all the things I've listed, then the misery wouldn't be as great as it is. But the fact of the matter is, in the 3 years since the occupation of Iraq, there are large areas in the country that only has access to electricity for 3 to 4 hours a day. And at this moment in time, in Baghdad, the temperatures are 45 degrees, and people don't have access to drinking clean drinking water because there's no electricity to keep the generators going, so people are drinking water from contaminated sources. The doctors that we've been liaising with have told us that there's actually now a cholera epidemic on the borders of Iran and Iraq, and the real fear now is that because there isn't enough electricity to keep water pumping, that cholera epidemic will inevitably start spreading into Iraq. And so the situation is very, very bad. And, you know, you talk about civilians and their suffering. I mean, I think one thing that we should all remember is Iraqi people are very dignified and they have been through a great deal. Their country's been under sanctions for over 10 years and they've adapted their lives to living in difficult conditions. But this is a new situation for them now, even though it's been going on for 3 years. It's getting worse and, you know, they do need the outside world to respond urgently to what's going on. And I think it's very, very important that particularly in places like the US of A, that you know, people are hearing what's going on inside Iraq. They may not be able to see it because of the fact that it's difficult for journalists to travel to that part of the world. But I think it's very important that they get accurate information so that they can then make an assessment about what they believe, you know, is right and what is wrong in terms of what's going on inside Iraq.
Let's talk again about what kinds of medical materials and other supplies are desperately needed right now for this crisis in Western Iraq.
Okay, well, all number of things are needed. I mean, for example, as I said earlier on, the main hospital in the area, Haditha, that's the main referral hospital, which 300,000 people in the surrounding areas would normally be you know, going to that hospital, using it if they needed to go to a hospital. That the entire medical store has been completely damaged. The laundry has been completely damaged. We've got staff in that hospital actually washing bed sheets and other material in the toilets, for example. I mean, that's how desperate the situation is. So lots of things are needed. Surgical kits, for example, basic medicines, simple things like bandages, operating tables, a whole number of things are needed. But what the Doctors for Iraq Society is saying is that more than anything, we need the outside world to stand up and speak out against what's happening, because we can get all this equipment in. It's possible for us to get it in, but what will happen is in the next few months or weeks or days. If another military attack is launched in the area, it's almost like you're going back to square one, which is what's been happening in the past few weeks and months, as our small team of doctors have been trying to rehabilitate some of the smaller hospitals in the area. A month or a few weeks later, they're finding that the attacks are continuing or they're escalating, and the hospital is back to square one again, which is very, very demoralizing for everybody involved. And so, you know, what we sort of would like to say to people is that if they believe that there is something they can do in terms of maybe writing a letter to a human rights organization or to them, you know, to somebody in authority, to ask them, you know, if they could get more information about what's going on and why these attacks are continuing, then that would be one good thing to do. And the other is if they wanted to make a donation or if they wanted to find out how to donate medical equipment, then we would possibly be able to help them with that. They could email the Doctors for Iraq. And what I'd like to say is that we've received a massive response from the American people. Many US citizens have emailed us, and they've written some very heartwarming emails explaining their shock and anger at the information that they've received regarding these attacks, and apologizing for what's happened, and are basically asking how they can help. And you know, that's very important for Iraqi people as well to know that there is a difference between the US government and the people of the country, which I think is quite important.
Are there other organizations that listeners can write to urge them to try to help you as well?
Absolutely. I mean, I think if somebody is motivated enough to pick up the telephone call and telephone even and call a member of their Congress, then fantastic. Because at the end of the day, there are many, many people around the world who are in solidarity with the Iraqi people, and the Iraqi people know that, and that is giving them a great deal of strength. And so, yes, we would say that if people want to write to international organisations and ask them, I mean, for example, the International Committee of the Red Cross, our staff on the ground have passed on some very credible information to us, and we've been able to forward it on to them. So it's not that people aren't interested. As I said, they're very, the international organizations, the human rights organizations, the humanitarian organizations are very much interested in returning to Iraq and trying to help the people and trying to build the society. But as I said, it's impossible for them to do that because of the horrific situation on the ground. So yes, any correspondence to those particular organizations, I'm sure would be greatly appreciated by the people who are suffering at the moment. One thing I think it might be hard for some people to really understand the level of affection that the Iraqi people have for their country and for their people. It's like something, nothing I've ever really witnessed before in terms of, you know, the deep passion that they have for their country. And that's really what is spurring on the young doctors working for Doctors for Iraq. They're working in very, very difficult conditions. They are being threatened themselves for their work on the ground. You know, they're working while missiles are being fired in the area, etc., etc. And so they're working under very difficult conditions. But, you know, they're doing what they believe they should be doing as doctors, which is trying to assist people. And so it's very dangerous for them to do it, but they have no other option because, as they say, we are Iraqis and we have to stay here and we have to help our people. So really, that's as simple as it is for them. I mean, the good thing is that some of our key members have been invited to numerous conferences around the world to talk at medical conferences about the situation on the ground. So, for example, one of our doctors recently returned from Ecuador, an international medical conference there, and we've been able to build some very good links with the outside world who, as I said, are very keen to work inside Iraq. The only trouble is that they cannot get inside Iraq because it's just so the security situation is so diabolical, and obviously there's lots of targeting towards Westerners as well, which makes things difficult. So the other thing I wanted to add is many doctors have been forced to leave Iraq. There's a huge brain drain going on because it's not safe for them to be there anymore. So many people have fled the country, people with real skills that are needed inside Iraq. So really the main message is that there is a place called Iraq. I don't know how much coverage Iraq's getting in the US, but I do know for myself that when I watch the European news coverage on Iraq, I'm not really hearing the voices of Iraqis. I'm not really seeing what's going on. I'm just getting tidbits of information. So what I'd say is, for your listeners, is to try and educate themselves about what's going on, really going on inside Iraq, and the internet is a great source for that. There's many solidarity organizations I know in the USA, for example, where there's some good people working to raise awareness of what's going on. And what I'd say is that for the Iraqi people, the main thing is that they want to live in peace, they want to live in a country free of occupation forces, and they want to live with dignity. And I don't think there's any group of people on this earth who wouldn't want those same things for themselves. And in terms of us and our work as a humanitarian organization, what we say to people is, as I said earlier, if your listeners want to help in terms of maybe, whatever they want to do in terms of help the people, we're happy to help them do that. We're happy to try and facilitate that.
Aisha joined us from Jordan, where she's helping to coordinate press for Doctors for Iraq, an independent group seeking to provide emergency aid and supplies to Iraqi civilians caught between various kinds of forces in Iraq. Contact her group at press.officer@doctorsforiraq.org. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. TalkNation.org for news and discussion about the program you've just heard. Talk Nation Radio is produced in the studios of WHUS Stores, radio for the people at UConn, the University of Connecticut in Connecticut. WHUS.org, Wednesdays at 5 for more.